Hello, my name is Bradley Sides, and my favorite thing is music.
Welcome to the Finding Favorites podcast, where we explore your favorite things without using an algorithm. Here's your host, Leah Jones.
Hello, and welcome to Finding Favorites. I'm your host, Leah Jones, and this is the podcast where we learn about people's favorite things and get recommendations without using an algorithm. I believe this weekend is AWP in Kansas City, home of the Chiefs, who the day of this recording are playing in the Super Bowl. But I'm not here to talk about any of that today. I am here with author Bradley Sides. His second story collection, Crocodile Tears Didn't Cause the Flood, is going to be released on February 24th, which is in the future for us today, but possibly in the past, the day you're listening to this episode. Crocodile Tears Didn't Cause the Flood is available with Montauk Books. Bradley is the author of Those Fantastic Lives, and his writing appears in the Chicago Review of Books, Electric Literature, Los Angeles Review of Books, The Millions, The Rumpus, and elsewhere. His fiction has been nominated for Year's Best Weird Fiction and featured on LeVar Burton Reads. A dream. A dream. He holds an MFA from Queen's University of Charlotte, where he served as fiction editor of Q, and currently lives in Huntsville, Alabama, and can be found teaching writing at Calhoun Community College. Bradley Sides, how are you doing this morning?
I'm great. How are you, Leah?
I'm good. I last night drove downstate to see my nephew in A Midsummer Night's Dream, high school Shakespeare, which was a blast. So I'm doing good. I did not sleep much, so I might be very weird.
That's all right.
So you're in Huntsville. That's home of NASA.
It is. Yeah. The school that I teach at, the Space and Rocket Center, is literally right across the highway. So I get to see a huge rocket every day whenever I'm going to work and leaving. It's awesome.
That's so cool. Is that your hometown or is that where you found yourself as an adult?
It's been where I've been the past couple of years. I grew up in Florence, Alabama, so it's about an hour-ish away. So Huntsville's always been kind of close and a place I've known.
Yeah. So at Calhoun, what are some of the topics that your students are studying with you?
So I do several things at Calhoun. I teach creative writing at our campus. I do news publication. I teach composition courses 1 and 2. And then I also stay busy with other things on campus. I'm the Sigma Kappa Delta co-advisor. That's the English Honors Society for two-year colleges.
Okay.
Also do our book club. I do our student newspaper. And I'm our incoming Common Read programming chair. So lots of cool literary stuff.
Cool. Is Common Read, is that like a one city, one book? Like here are the books that all of our incoming students need to read?
Yes, very similar to that. We just did our first year of our Common Read this past year. So we're gearing up for year two. And it's really been awesome. It's really surpassed, I think, any and all expectations we had set for ourselves. We picked T-Buoys the best we could do. Okay. As my first pick. So it was really cool to do a graphic memoir and have students talking about that. But yeah, it's been a great community builder. I've loved being a part of it.
Nice. So everybody's expected to read it. Are there then, do like all the professors have different seminar groups that they're meeting with about the book? Or how are the students processing the book?
We share it through different classes. A lot of our first year composition classes are using the book as a kind of connector. Across all of our campuses. The cool thing about Calhoun is that we have three campuses. We have one in Huntsville, which I'm at. Then we have a Decatur campus. And then we have another Decatur campus, which is our Alabama Center for the Arts, mm-hmm. where all of our kind of visual arts and performance arts classes are. So different instructors are using the book in different ways.
Nice.
And there's a lot of flexibility in it. And I think that's what's making it work so well. We have a lot of programming throughout the year. We've tried to do kind of one event per month. That way, students can just kind of continually have conversation about the book and about the themes of the book, and so can faculty and staff.
Very cool. And now are you working on the selection of year two?
We are. We have tentatively made a decision about what that book's going to be. I can't quite say yet, but it's really cool. And I think it'll give us the opportunity to have some really excellent programming, I think.
Oh, I love that. So in just a couple weeks, your second story collection, Crocodile Tears Didn't Cause the Flood, is being released. Tell me about this collection.
Well, this collection is, in many ways, a labor of love. I wrote most of the book during my MFA years. I was doing the MFA program from 2020, so right when COVID was getting started, through 2022. I had actually gotten accepted into the program right as COVID was kind of beginning, and I had no idea what the experience was going to look like at that point.
Yeah.
It turns out the whole program was virtual because of COVID, but it was cool. We had a, you know, I had a great time. I had some great instructors.
Had you already moved for school when COVID started, or were you able to like stay put?
I was able to stay put.
Okay.
Which was really cool because I was teaching high school at the time, and it kind of gave me, the way it was structured, we did 2 residencies per year.
Mm-hmm.
So the residencies coincided with when I was able to step away from high school. So it all worked out really well.
Nice.
And I thought the transition was really smooth. You know, nobody really knew how to transition, I think, at first to virtual, but it worked, and it worked really well. It was a cool experience. But I wrote most of the stories during my MFA experience at Queens. Not all of them, but most of them. And they came together. I found that they were really shaped by the time. There's a lot of loss, a lot of grief. But there's also a lot of the stories were coming out and me creating them as the world was starting to shift to a little bit of hope on the edges. So I think that in the collection too, like, yes, there's darkness. Yes, there's loss. But there's some sense of hope on the edges that gives a sense of lightness to the stories. And they're magical realism, Southern magical realism. So I really wanted to engage with the magic of the world a little bit in the collection.
As someone who grew up in the South, I feel like anything I'm going to say about Southern magic, I'm just going to end up saying super the wrong thing, right? I was raised hearing it called voodoo. I don't think that's a respectful thing to call magic from like the bayou anymore. Mm-hmm. But did you grow up with an awareness of or the culture of people doing that sort of community magic, or is this more like the mists roll in at night and you're imagining a different world in the South?
Yeah, the South I grew up in, I've always lived in rural North Alabama. Huntsville's not rural, but I've, you know, recently moved. So I've always been around that place. And there's really no sense of community magic that in my area where I've lived and where I've grown up. But I've been shaped really by the natural world in a big way, if that kind of makes sense. I grew up on a cattle farm, and one sense I just recall all these years later is the cows crying out at night for their calves that have been separated from them. You know, you think like that, and you can imagine laying in bed and out back at the pond, you hear these bullfrogs croaking, and you grow up with animals everywhere, and you see just life and death. And I think there's a lot of room to imagine. And I think that's really where the interest in magic began, because I think in many ways I had a magical childhood.
Yeah, I feel like at least when I was in college, which was in the 90s, the magical realism I was introduced to was like Gabriel Garcia Marquez. It was coming from South America, and there wasn't much, if any, written by American writers. So I think it's really interesting to be bringing magical realism into the American tradition.
Yeah, and I think that's my experience too. I remember the first time I read Marquez, and I was just like, this is it. You know, I loved it. Mm-hmm. I was influenced too, I think there were some works that had magical realism or had some sense of fables and those kinds of things I'm really interested in. Like, I'm thinking of Daniel Wallace's Big Fish. That's probably the most influential text that I've read on my work. Michael Chabon's The Amazing Adventures of Cavalier and Clay has bits of magic at the edges. And then I started reading short stories, contemporary short stories, when I was in college, and works by like Karen Russell, works by Kelly Link. Those were kind of those early ones. It's like, yeah, I see magic's kind of happening out there. And it's something that I thought was new at the time. I don't know if it was. I don't know if I was well enough to know. But it felt new and it excited me. And I was like, yeah, this is my space.
Yeah. So the collection starts to take form during your MFA program, which is peak COVID.
Yes.
Were your residencies, did you get to do your in-person residencies at all?
No, the last one. So it was I can't remember how many residencies were in the program. I want to say 4 or 5, something like that.
Yeah.
The last one, I know some people were able to go for that residency. I was not able due to moving at that time. And my advisor was kind enough to work with me in that way.
Yeah.
It was as I was, my wife and I were moving to Huntsville to work at Calhoun. So it was, timing wasn't perfect on my end, but I do know some of my peers got to meet, which they enjoyed, I'm sure.
Nice. So in the gap, there's not much of a gap, but in between finishing your MFA, I'm always curious then how much rewriting or editing or what did it take to get it from pieces you wrote during your program to this is a cohesive collection?
That's a great question. I'm a huge reviser. I revise all the time. When I'm writing, I'm one of those people that I can't just write a draft and then go back and edit it. I revise as I'm writing constantly. Which is probably not a good thing, but that's, it's what I do. But when I finished the stories, I had a collection together probably mid-2022, because a lot of the stories were of my thesis. And then I took those stories and I started resequencing them. Mm-hmm. And whenever I was putting them back in different orders, I was like, yeah, I have to change this part. I have to change this phrasing. I have to change this, name. Sometimes I'll catch myself. I've used names repeatedly and I have to go and change those. I probably edited for at least 6 months going back through. And my collection's very short. It's 142 pages, I think, is what the print copy is. I just got my print copy yesterday, so it was really cool.
Oh, congratulations. How exciting.
Yeah, it's always cool to open that first box.
Nice. So it'll be available February 24th. Are you doing in-person launch events? Are you doing virtual launch? How are you celebrating the publication?
Everything is still kind of getting planned at this point. The book is, I think it's popping up even early at some places from what I've been told. So maybe it's out in certain places, maybe not. But I know some of the early events, I'm going to be doing an event at Calhoun. There's going to be a public release there. There's going to be, Huntsville has a Rocket City Reading Festival that's happening in early March, which is going to be really awesome at the Orion Amphitheater. So I'll be there. I'll be doing a couple of readings at some other schools in the area, down at Auburn, at Montgomery. I'm going to be at a conference in March. So lots of things popping up, and I'm hoping more will be added as we're getting started with the book.
Outstanding. And how can people get the book?
They should be able to get it from their local indies, also Amazon, of course, and all the usual book places. But I always say support the local independents if you can.
I have a bookshop.org affiliate page with books recommended by guests and books by guests. So we'll make sure that we link to it through bookshop.org, which then supports independent bookstores.
Yes. Awesome.
Well, Bradley, your book is what gave us the occasion to get together today and talk, but we're also here to talk about one of your favorite things. And you sent me a few ideas. You're super into music.
I am.
But I'm curious, where are we going to start today?
Gosh, we can start with, let's start with The National, because The National's kind of a landmark band, just a band that I've loved most of my adult life. So I'll start with them.
Awesome. Well, let's do some time travel. Do you remember hearing The National for the first time or buying that for... I probably didn't buy their first CD, buying that first download from iTunes. What was your first moment with The National?
First moment with The National was, okay, so a little bit of placement. Where I grew up, like I said, it was a very rural place. There wasn't just a lot of stuff around. So when I was 16 and started working, it was like, you'd have to drive half an hour to get to where you were going to work or something like that, way out. So I really got into music at that point. And just kind of continued on, because you have long drives as a young person and there was no kind of phone connections of Bluetooth and all that to keep you coming. If you're driving, you have music. So that's kind of how it began. And then when I graduated, I had an even longer trek because college was an hour, one way to get there. So I spent a lot of time with music.
Oof.
Oof is right. So it was kind of in the space when I had finished high school. And I was working at a grocery store and I had all this time to read magazines about what all's out and let's try some new music, reading all the music magazines. And I was reading about The National. I was like, yeah, let's listen to it and see what it is. So Alligator had just come out right when I had graduated high school. So, young and looking for that new band, and they catch with what I was really interested in. And I never let go. I can remember just listening to Alligator for hours upon hours upon hours, just constantly.
Yeah.
Love that record. I still listen to it all the time.
Nice. And when you got Alligator, did you got the CD so you could listen to it during your drive?
Yes, I had this, gosh, what were those things called? Walkmans? Is that what they're called?
Yeah, a little Discman.
Yeah, and you would have to plug it into like the cigarette lighter thing in the, yeah. So that's how I listened to the National at first.
Nice. Yeah, I recently took my big CD book and took it to my car because I was like, my car is my only CD player anymore. So why wouldn't I have all my music in my CD player that has wheels?
Yes. I just got a new vehicle a couple years ago, and it's the first time I don't have a CD player, and it's very strange.
Wow.
You know, the Bluetooth thing is the new.
Yeah, I have my car is a 2016, so I think it was just on the verge of when they stopped default putting CD players in.
Yes. Yeah. I miss them, honestly.
Yeah, I'm just like, it's time travel to go back into my CD collection because there's mixed CDs from friends that go back to the 90s. There's right now I've got the soundtrack to Garden State. I've been listening to that for a few days.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah. Not great when you're driving at 2 a.m. on the highway. I did have to turn it off and find something else to listen to, but it's such a great vibe.
Yes.
So you get Alligator by the National. So that comes out in 2005, and you're listening to it on repeat on your long commutes. Have you ever had the chance to see them perform live?
Oh, many, many, many times.
Borderline
impressive. Yeah. So I can't give you a number of how many times I've seen them.
Thrilling.
In the past year, I've probably seen them 6 times, would be my guess. I was at their homecoming last year in Cincinnati. It was awesome. One of the best shows I've ever been to. Both nights were just really great.
Are they a Cincinnati band?
Yes.
Cool.
So they bring it back. I think they've only done it a couple of times because COVID, you know, but
yeah,
it was just really cool to be out in their place, you know, where they're from. And I'm sure family and friends are there that they've, you know, known for years. It's just a very kind of intimate, special kind of festival, I think. They put it on, they bring in their bands that, you know, that fit with them really well, and they closed both nights. It was just a great time.
That is so cool. So let's talk about the first time you were able to see them live.
Mm-hmm.
Where was that? When was that? How many albums deep were you by the time you got to see them live for the first time?
Oh, goodness. it's so terrible to not remember, isn't it? It's probably been... I wasn't able to see a lot of shows when I was... a student in college, just because I didn't have the money for it or the means to really kind of travel. And where I lived, there were no, you know, the National weren't going to be where I live. So
right.
Cool thing. So I was a little bit older. It was probably within the past 5-ish years that I actually saw them the first time, I would guess.
Yeah.
And I just remember the energy of the show. It was just, you know, for years and years, you spent time with this band and you have these songs that you love and you have these lyrics that just kind of jump out to you in all these moments. And then to see it live and to feel it with other people who love the National. I mean, it's just, they're just an incredible live band.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, they have obviously the songs that you know, but it's those songs take on these different sounds and forms and energies, seeing them live. It's just really cool.
Yeah. And does your wife, is she along for the National ride? Does she also love them, or is this a solo music endeavor for you?
Oh, well, she loves me, so she deals with, you know, she tags along. I don't think it's really her thing, but she's supportive and she's there.
Yeah, nice. So in the last year, you saw him a number of times, including homecoming.
Yes, yes.
That's so cool. I just opened up the like page for the homecoming in Cincinnati. I mean, it's an incredible Patti Smith.
Yeah.
Pavement. That's a great 2-day lineup.
Yes. I loved Bartee's Strange, too.
Mm-hmm.
A new artist that I've just really enjoyed over the past couple of years. And he was excellent. Excellent.
Yeah.
I'm coming.
And then each night they played a different album from beginning to end.
They did. And that was really cool.
Yeah.
I got to see several songs that I hadn't been able to see before or hear before. You know, you get to hear separate albums, of course. And then they did some repeats of their classic songs, which I get because, you know, you have so many people who haven't been able to see them before, and there are certain songs that everybody wants to hear. But to hear so many different songs each night was just really cool. There's still a couple of songs I'm hoping I'll be able to hear at some point that I was really hoping for at homecoming.
Yeah.
But that's the way it works.
What are those songs that you're still chasing?
Secret Meeting is one of my favorite songs of all time. It's the song that kicks off Alligator.
Okay.
And then The Geese of Beverly Road, which is a little bit later in their discography. No, The Geese of Beverly Road's on Alligator, I believe, too. But both those songs, I would love to hear them live.
Yeah.
So hopefully whenever homecoming happens again, Alligator will be one that they'll play from beginning to end. That would be something.
That would be really cool. I'm clicking over to look at their. Oh, wow. 91?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so 1991 to 2006 was like getting to know each other. Not necessarily, they didn't like launch in 91.
Yeah, I think Alligator was really the first one that kind of got attention.
Yeah.
You know, from the bigger kind of press. And that was, of course, how I found them. But there was some records out before then that I've gone back and listened to, of course. But yeah, I think 2005 was really when they hit.
Yeah. And when you are trying to bring people onto the national bandwagon, where do you, like, what either five songs or like two albums, YouTube clips, like how, what is your prescription for getting someone started on the national?
That's a good one, Leah. I think Alligator is always what I recommend just because I love it so much. And it has so many great songs on it. There's Secret Meeting. There's Geese of Beverly Road. There's Abel. There's Mr. November. Mr. November is one of their bigger songs. So those are ones that I would definitely recommend to people. I think Trouble Will Find Me is probably their best album. Or their most, maybe not best. Maybe it is the best. I don't know. It depends on the day that you ask me.
Today it's their best.
Yeah, today is their best. I love their song Sea of Love. It just has so much energy. Gosh, I don't know. There are several YouTube clips that I send to people. One is a live performance of Don't Swallow the Cap and moves into Sea of Love.
Yeah.
I don't know. There's so many things that people are like, probably stop sending me this. But, you know, I love it. So I hope
you
do too.
And there, I feel like I saw, like, I'm sort of like clicking around, looking at things. Aren't they like David Letterman's favorite band to have on the show?
Yeah, I think so. I know there's this connection to Letterman. I'm asleep way too early to really watch the late night stuff and know about too much of that. But I know he is a big fan and supports them often.
Yeah, I feel like I recently saw an interview. Maybe he was with Conan. Like, I don't remember who he was talking to about how much he enjoyed getting to know new music on his talk show. And the bands he got to know, and I feel like the National maybe played his last show or something. I don't know. I could be lying to you.
No, you're probably right. I know there's the connection there because I've seen them together.
Yeah. Oh, they just released an interview in December, a conversation between Matt Berninger and David Letterman.
Yes, very cool.
Okay, nice. Do the musicians in the National have solo projects that you also follow, or are you... You like them when they're together. You focus on that.
Yeah, I tend to like them when they're together. I mean, they have some different projects, of course, that they work on that I've listened to and, you know, respect. But to me, the National's the National. So I always kind of gravitate toward their work together.
Yeah. And are you in any... So my big fandoms that I'm active in are podcast fandoms.
Yes.
No big surprise there. I'm a podcaster. Mm-hmm. Are you active in the National fandom? Like, are you in any Facebook groups or fan communities, and do you do any of that?
Yes.
Awesome.
I hate to admit, but I'm a member of their Cherry Tree fan club, which is a little bit, you know, maybe overboard. But it's really cool because you get, you know, posters for shows, of course, are available to the whoever attends.
Yeah.
And the next day on Cherry Tree, they have special editions of the posters that are cool. In different countries. So every time I go to a show, I get the Cherry Tree version, which is really nice. And you also get a live record at the end of the year of one of their shows or mix of shows, you know, whatever the put together product is.
Yeah.
Which is really nice because I love live recordings. I tend to like to listen to live recordings more than produced for most bands. And also, of course, I'm in their Reddit, you know, whatever those are called, communities or whatever.
Yeah.
I was also a huge, perk of last year. One of my personal highlights is, according to Apple's replay at the end of the year, I was one of their top 100 fans, which is really something.
Right? Very cool.
Yeah. I think it was 69,000 plus minutes. So it was disturbing, perhaps.
That's so much time.
It is. It's like, wow, Bradley, you spend a lot of time listening to the National.
Yeah. No, I am. The episode I released last week was with Paul Scheer, who is the host of How Did This Get Made, which is a podcast I've been listening to for over 7 years. Uh-huh. I have gone to shows in L.A., Chicago, Philadelphia, New York. So I have traveled to see them. I am in a Facebook group. Like, I have met people in person. We have organized dinners. So I love a fan community, and I don't think it's embarrassing to be a member of a paid member of their official fan club. Especially if you get bonus posters. That is cool.
They're nice posters too. I really love their art. I'm like, yeah, maybe not. But they have some really cool posters. And I love the color variations. It helps my office at work have some nice variation.
Yeah.
I have a lot of National posters up.
Yeah.
And some National records. I have a National office at place of employment.
It's a house museum. It's an office museum for the National / where you get office hours with Professor Sides.
Exactly.
So the Cherry Tree posters, so they release a special edition. Mm-hmm. And then do they ship it to you so you also don't have to worry about crushing your poster during the show?
They do. Awesome. Yeah, it's really nice. But now I also get a regular poster too. Mm-hmm. So I get the regular poster at the show, and then the next morning I make sure I'm on it. Whatever time, I can't remember what time, but 9:30 in the morning to make sure I get the Cherry Tree.
Yeah.
As well.
Nice. That is one of the things I've started for merch, trying to buy enamel pens.
Oh yeah, that's cool.
I guess I don't have it. I moved it. It used to be up behind me. I have a t-shirt, a custom t-shirt that I made about How Did This Get Made. Mm-hmm. And I put it in an embroidery ring. And then I've been putting enamel pens that I get at different shows on it because I don't trust myself not to crush a poster in my suitcase.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
Yeah.
The pens, that is a good idea. Yeah.
Well, I also, during COVID, made 2 t-shirt quilts out of mostly podcast t-shirts. And I was like, I have to stop buying shirts because I don't need any more. I have a lot of quilts now.
Yeah, I do a lot of shirts too from shows.
Yeah.
They kind of capture the time, which is really cool.
Yeah. And have you, through the fan community or the official fan club, are there then VIP experiences? Have you ever gotten to do a meet and greet? Have you ever gotten to chit chat with any of the band members?
No, I don't think that I would want to.
Yeah.
I like that separation of not knowing the people you kind of look up to and the work you do. I'm sure they're nice guys and all that kind of stuff, but I like the, a little bit of separation, just respecting the art they do.
So you found Bartiz Strange through them.
I did.
Are there other bands you found through them or through the fan community that are also in your favorites?
Ooh, goodness. I definitely found Bartiz through them. I'm trying to remember who all's been at recent openers and stuff at their shows.
You also mentioned in your email Tyler Childers and Fleet Foxes.
Oh, yes. I spend a lot of time listening to their music as well. So Tyler Childers is just absolutely one of my favorites as well. I'm seeing him in a couple of months. He's going to be in Nashville. So this will be the third-ish time I've been able to see him.
Nice.
I've been trying to see Tyler Childers for the longest time. And then sickness would come, or COVID shuts down shows and, all those kinds of things. But then last year, we were able to catch him for sure. And then hopefully this year, we'll be able to see him in Nashville. But love his music. It's this mix of sort of country, sort of Americana, has a little bit of folk maybe in it, if you wanted to say that. Mm-hmm. Just really cool stuff. I really like his themes in his music. He's very interested, I think, in just this progressive South, which I'm interested in. Mm-hmm. He also has kind of these faith-based records or religious-based records, which I'm interested in as well. You know, has a great voice and story. So he's a great storyteller. And yeah, I spend a lot of time listening to his music as well.
Nice. So I'm in Huntsville. When you have the chance to see music, is it you have to go up or slash over to Nashville? Or are there, what are the cities you look at for bands coming through?
So Huntsville used to be that way. And then I think it was 2 years ago, we got a new amphitheater. And the amphitheater is awesome. And it's been attracting some really great, really great bands.
Nice.
I think the seating capacity is around 8,000. So it's, you know, a respectable size to bring in some nice bands. We've been able to see My Morning Jacket there. Jason Isbell has been there. Mm-hmm. Brandi Carlile was there recently that we saw. Weezer was there. I mean, we've done lots of
shows. Wow, fun.
Yeah, it's been really cool. So I'm hoping as it gets more and more popular and people are seeing, like, Huntsville has this really great venue that we'll be able to draw, you know, just bigger and bigger names. So it's really nice addition. Plus, I live like 10 minutes from it. So that's extra nice.
That's great. And Huntsville has the, like, hotel capacity because of Space Camp and the space program. Like, it has tourism capacity.
Yes. And more, it seems like more and more by the week. I mean, yeah. Huntsville is growing. Like, I mean, it's becoming a big city. I mean, truly, we have so many people coming in with employment opportunities. And I mean, I think traffic is a way to kind of judge that. And
right.
Terrible now because there's just so many new people and the highways haven't caught up with them yet. It's a growing city.
Yeah. So some bands are coming to you, but you're going to go to Nashville for Tyler.
Yes.
Do you have some songs you're chasing of his that you hope you'll get to hear this time?
You know, with Tyler, I've heard most of the songs that I really love because I've seen him in different kinds of venues, I guess, and different kinds of phases, maybe. Mm-hmm. So I've been able to hear the older songs that I've really loved and then the newer ones as well. My favorite song of Tyler Childers is Universal Sound. I just love the song. It's kind of this, I don't know if universal religion is the right kind of phrase to use, but it's about the sense of the religious world in a natural sense and community and, you know, those kinds of things that I think are interesting. And it sounds a little bit different from his usual music, but I love it. He actually, so there's this group called Sound Waves, and they take songs from artists and they make these prints that are based on songs, and the artist will sign a few and add lyrics to them, you know, just that kind of thing.
Yeah.
They actually released a copy of Universal Sound last year. And I was like, oh, perfect. Cause it's one of my very favorite songs. So I was glad to be able to snag that as a true Tyler fan. It's very, very cool.
Cool. Oh, I just opened up their website. It's really, there's some very cool prints.
Yeah, they're really nice. And, you know, the money goes to charity. So you feel like you're supporting some, you know, positively. So it's a good venture, I think.
Yeah. Nice. How about the Fleet Foxes?
Fleet Foxes is the best show I've ever seen.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I love that show. It was so up north of where I am, about, I don't know, hour and a half, there's Suwannee, the University of the South.
Yep.
And just outside, there's this venue called The Caverns. The Caverns is the coolest venue I have ever seen. It's this cave. You have to walk, I don't know how far, I'll say half a mile, but that's probably not right. So you walk into the woods up this path that's like lighted and these huge trees, and then you make your way to this cave that's, you know, it's cold because it's a cave.
Sure.
Winter, and it's just, I don't know, it's kind of this just magical kind of place in ways. It's really strange to describe being in a cave to for a concert. And on the night we saw Fleet Foxes, it was just raining and frogs were singing in the back, and, you know, you could hear all kinds of things. It was just, gosh, perfect. Perfect. Especially with Robin.
How many people are in the cave?
So this show was actually set up outside the cave. So you went in the cave for, you know, the merch was in there and, you know, lots of things were in there. But the concert itself was set up outside the cave.
Uh-huh.
This particular one, maybe because of the number of people. I don't know why. But gosh, I don't know how many people were there. I would guess, I don't know how many people would fit inside the cave. It's kind of small. But I know, like, Brandi Carlile was there. Watch House has been there pretty recently. So it's a respectable number, I'm sure.
How cool.
It's really
cool. I've never heard of it.
Yeah.
I have I studied abroad with two girls from who went to school in Swanee. So that's how I know about it.
Yeah. It's a beautiful place. Like the school and the area, it's just nice.
Cool. And is that the only time you've seen fleet foxes?
Yes, it is. I'm hoping I'll get to see them again soon. Their album Shore kind of got me through COVID in many ways. It was kind of this hopeful record that had these moments of just, I think, of what I was looking for at the time. And I listened to it repeatedly. So I'm hoping that they'll be touring somewhere close in the near future, because I absolutely love their show and listen to their music a lot.
Nice. I don't know if I know much about the Fleet Foxes. I've heard of them. But, you know, where I think a lot of people went deep into music during COVID, I went deep into podcasts that made it feel like I was hanging out with people.
I get that.
Yeah, I lived alone with two cats. And so I was like, any podcast that felt like there was a group of people in the other room and I was just listening while I was doing chores is where I, that's how I got through.
You know, I encountered some podcasts too during that time that I enjoyed. They're more, I don't know if they really would fit what you're talking about because they were a little bit more cold, I guess, but S-Town, I love S-Town.
Oh, yeah.
That was wild. And of course, like everybody, I've listened to Serial, which was cool. There was one about Mr. Rogers that I liked. And
yeah.
I don't know, several that I enjoyed.
Yeah, I tend to listen to like, they're like loosely themed hangout podcasts. So How Did This Get Made is about bad movies. Doughboys is about fast food. High and Mighty is just a comedian. It's essentially like he's talking to other comics about things they love. Anything with Nicole Byer. So comedians hanging out is my podcast jam.
Is Nicole Byer the Nailed It lady?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. My wife and I are watching The Good Place again currently.
Awesome.
Yeah, just finished the episode with her. It was really cool.
Where she shows up at, she's the postal. She's the post.
Yeah.
She's so great. I had just booked a vacation based on a very casual mention she made on her podcast of a thing she did in South Africa. And I was like, well, I'll go do that thing.
That sounds awesome.
Yeah. It's a train, the Rovos Rail, and it goes from Victoria Falls in Zimbabwe to Pretoria in South Africa. And then you sleep on the train during the day. You do like safari outings. And it's not like a random spontaneous trip. I have a friend who's based in Nairobi in Kenya with the State Department. And I was feeling very overwhelmed by like, how do you plan safari? Like the choices are endless. It's overwhelming. And I wasn't making any progress on the trip. And then Nicole Byer, she went to Africa in January and talked about it on our podcast. And I'm like, I will just take all of your plans. Thank you.
That's perfect timing. Have you been to that part of the world before?
No.
Oh, so this will be kind of a first full experience. That's really neat.
Yeah. I've been to Europe a few times. I've been to Israel many times and studied abroad in South America. But Africa is just hadn't been super on my travel radar.
Yeah.
And then my friend got stationed there and she's there for 2 years and, you know, why not?
Yeah. I think that'd be an awesome trip. I would love to do something like that. Just really neat. Different kind of experience than the usual. So.
Yeah. So that is thanks to Nicole Byer from Nailed It. Let's see. So you've got Tyler Childers coming up in Nashville. What other shows are on your radar, or who are some people touring that you hope you get to spend some time with this year?
That's a good one. You know, I'm one of these people who, when I find something I like, I listen to it over and over and over and over again.
Yeah, I get that.
You know, so I don't know. I think I've really seen a lot of the people that I want to see. The only band that I have not been able to see yet that I would really love to is Watch House. I really love their kind of folksy sound and just having harmonies. I would love to see them at some point. But otherwise, I'm really hoping I can see The National 5 or 6 times this year, you know?
Nice. Have they announced a tour?
They have not. Well, they're going to be in Australia with the Fleet Foxes. Talk about a heck of a show there.
Yeah. Maybe you can find a grant.
Yeah. Yeah, I just can't do the flight. My wife and I went to American Samoa over Christmas break. It's like, yeah, this is just way too far for me to fly.
Yeah.
It was a heck of a flight. But, you know, maybe one day I'll work up the courage if the National Fleet Foxes do it again.
Yeah. That's one of the things about going to South Africa is it's, you know, it's like 12 hours to Istanbul and then another, I don't know, 8 to 10 hours to Johannesburg, which will be, it will be the longest travel days I think I've ever had.
Yeah, that's like, you know, it's worth it.
But yeah.
It's just so, so much.
Yeah.
If only boats could go over land.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I have a 10-hour layover in Istanbul, and a friend who was watching me book the tickets, he was like, oh, 10 hours. I was like, yeah, 10 hours, not in a plane. I just get to stretch out, snack on food, wander around the airport. Yes, a 10-hour break for me between two major flights is fine.
Yes. Do you think you'll go out of the airport at all with 10 hours, or you'll stay inside?
10 hours isn't quite enough time. Turkish Airlines will, they book specifically flights with like 24-hour layovers, so you can go into Istanbul. Mm-hmm. So 10 hours, I'm lazy. I could just sit in a lounge and play games on my phone, or like hectically run around a city I've never been to.
I respect that.
So yeah. I'm going to choose lazy.
Yeah, I probably would too.
Yeah, but one of these times, because I really like flying Turkish because I like the airport in Istanbul. Mm-hmm. So one of these times I'll take them up on their 22-hour, 24-hour layover and I'll do it. Yeah. I really want to, I want to go to Istanbul. I guess it's that I don't want to do it wrong.
Yeah.
So I keep not doing it, which is, that's not great either. Mm. I have the page open for shows coming up at the Caverns.
Oh, yeah.
And they have, so I wouldn't go to this, but I don't think I knew this band was still out there. And that's Memorial Day weekend. They're having Cave Jam, which is the String Cheese Incident and 20 other bands.
Really?
And I remember the String Cheese Incident from like 2000 when I lived in Colorado. Like they've really been around a long time.
Yeah, I don't think a lot of venues have fully kind of announced their early season yet. We're in that period where I think announcements are slowly starting to trickle in.
Yeah.
So I was watching to see, you know, what's coming. I would really love to go to Red Rocks. That's the one place, you know, I get it. You know, it's Red Rocks. Everybody, you know, wants to go there. And it's, you know, maybe it's overplayed with hop. Maybe it's not. I don't know. I've never been there. But I'd love to see, you know, one of my bands there.
Yeah. I don't think it's overhyped.
Have you been?
No.
Oh, okay.
No, but a lot of my friends have. Uh-huh. And it's just, it's a stunning venue.
Yeah. So beautiful just to like, that whole part of the country is beautiful. Mm-hmm. And I just think I would love it. I love outdoor venues.
Yeah.
I think people are rowdier and rowdy groups really bother me at shows, which is why I like, you know, one reason I like the National, we're all very quiet and sit in our seats. Mm-hmm. Very, very well. But no, I would just love to see a show at Red Rocks. It's just something really cool about that space.
That's, yeah.
You know, it has a lot of history with it and a lot of good energy with the place and, you know, just something I respect.
Yeah. And so many, like you're going in with having heard, you know, whether it's Dave Matthews live at Red Rocks, like there's so many good live albums that have been recorded there.
Yes.
And you can't beat the setting.
Yeah.
Other than a giant cavern in Tennessee. That's also very cool.
Yeah, it's pretty nice.
Yeah. Yeah. Our outdoor venues in Chicago, we have Pritzker Pavilion, which is like downtown in Millennial Park. So it's a band shell, an abstract band shell with a huge lawn. And that's a ton of fun for mostly free concerts. And then Ravinia, which is in the northern suburbs, where there's a pavilion, you can get seats in the pavilion. But it's just, you just go to have a picnic and listen to the band, but you can't see the band because they're down in the pavilion. But people take these huge picnics and like candles and cheese and wine. And it's just like a very fun kind of decadent picnic situation.
That's nice.
Yeah.
Anything outside I'm all for. I'm just an outside kind of person with, you know, anything, I guess. But I just really like the space and the energy it gives.
Yeah. Well, Bradley, is there anything about the National, Fleet Foxes, Tyler Childers, live music that I haven't asked you about that you'd be disappointed that you didn't get to say?
No, I think we've talked about them pretty well. You know, I just I love their music. They've been a huge part of my life. And, you know, personally, and then also just creatively, I'm really inspired by what they do and the way that they write and the way they create and all those things that I just really respect. So I'm grateful for what they've given me and in my life, I guess.
Awesome. So your new story collection, Crocodile Tears Didn't Cause the Flood, available February 24th from independent bookstores and Amazon. Where can people find you on the internet?
Oh, so on the internet, I'm not a very active social media person. I just don't do social.
Good for you.
Yeah. I did make a Facebook page to make the publishers and stuff happy, but I don't really keep it that active. And nowhere else on social media will you find me. But I do have a website. It's www.bradley-sides.com. And I have a blog there where I write about things that I enjoy and things that are happening in the world and my life. So that's the best place to keep up with.
Outstanding. You can find Finding Favorites anywhere that you listen to podcasts. Please rate and review 5 stars on Apple Podcasts, Good Pods, Spotify. You can follow us on Instagram, Finding Faves Pod, Finding F-A-V-S Pod. And if you would like to pitch yourself or pitch an idea for a guest, email me, findingfavoritespodcast@gmail.com. Bradley, this has been an absolute delight.
Thank you for having me, Leah. I enjoyed talking to you. It was awesome.
Thank you for listening to Finding Favorites with Leah Jones. Please make sure to subscribe and drop us a 5-star review on iTunes. Now, go out and enjoy your favorite things.